This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Okay. So we just thought to start off that Yale would present some clips and give some introductory comments about her work, and then we'll have a discussion and open it up to the audience.
Not a lecture, but it's more like a surgery, let's say, of my brain, and try to just to share with you the way I think, the way I do my work, and what I'm engaged with. I've been until about 2007 working mainly in Israel and Palestine, trying to investigate my homeland, trying to see how it affected me as a citizen, as an artist, as a person who think and feel. And it's been from a kind of what I from a distance. So I actually left Israel in 96. So from 2000 I started to work and kind of what I call the amateur anthropologist, looking at from distance at my at Israel and Palestine, and trying to understand through basically national identity what it means, how it's created, what affects, how it's done through state and social rituals. And then in 2007 or 2006, I started to explore Poland by invitation. Actually, I was invited to go to Poland and make a new work. And Poland is like the worst place on earth for Jews and Israelis. So this was my starting point, knowing that this is like a place that nobody wants to visit. Nobody, if you visit, you visit only because the state of Israel organized trips to go to Auschwitz and the mouth of the March of the Death, and so to experience the horrific history of the Second World War. And I decided to go and try to see, to look at it in a different way, like what I experienced there and what people I meet, and I wanted to learn what are the conditions. And during the my visit there, one of the things that was really interesting for me was to find out about what they call Polish intelligentsia, how they deal with that history. Actually, before I show a clip, this is the man I met during my visit, and with whom I later actually began working. Invited him to be the protagonist of my film trilogy. This young man, he was 26 when I met him. He was he was the founder of Krytyka Polityczna. It's the new left in Poland. So I left that after communist time, there was a need for a new left and to kind of deal with with Poland. What is the Poland today, and how do we want to live in Poland? And during my excursions or my exploring of Poland, the things that really struck me was the void of the non-Jewish community. So you go to cities and towns where Jews once lived, and it's empty. And this was very powerful, and that kind of triggered me to think what could happen if actually there is a return and there is a possibility of change. And I came to this guy, Slawomir Szałkowski, and I said, I would like you, I'm dealing with the idea of you Polish people asked 3.3 million Jews to return back to Poland. And 3.3 was the community until the Second World War. So it is a symbolic number. And he agreed quite fast, and we worked for 1 year and prepared a speech and kind of made all the plans for a film. And I'll show you a clip, just the first few minutes.
Żydzi! Robacy! Ludzie!
this film was done in 2007 and presented in various places. Started, the premiere was of course in Poland, and then was shown in Israel, and it triggered a lot of conversations, difficult, very emotional, very kind of, I'd say, for leftists, it was kind of an interesting intellectual game. For some people, it was very emotional. You know, one journalist interviewed me about the work, and she had tears looking at the film because she felt like they, Polish people, finally asked her to return back to Poland. So it was, there was something very real about the invitation for her. And then from the, let's say, the right-wing Israelis and Polish people, they hated the idea. Of course, they don't want any Jews back, and the Israelis do not want to go back. But it was, it's more about the method of political imagination. It's more like how do you, to think of political change, to think of social change, to overcome certain traumas, you have to do some act, and for me, it was more like the return was more like going to the prime scene, you know, it's an act of overcoming a trauma. Even I never moved to Poland, I moved to Germany, but I still, it's the idea that there's certain things to do and imagine a possibility for change. And as a reflection or kind of mirroring this idea was also the idea of what would happen if Israel would invite Palestinians to go back to their homeland. You know, there's a long, open political thing going on that Palestinians are not not welcome back to Israel. So it was for me a project that was kind of mirrored and reflected the two countries that are very nationalist and very, as something that I noticed that the left is a very, the minority, both in Israel and Poland. There's a really left minority, yeah, of thinking differently, that are not trapped in a certain kind of conservatism. And this work made for that, and after showing the work, it was for me clear that I would like to continue and think, okay, if the guy invites us to return, in what way there's a return, and returning to whom, and who is returning, and who are the Jews that he's asking to return, because they're dead. And of course, as more as I understood him, of course, he wants the intellectual Jews who were, you know, the culture was, the prosperity of culture was really very, very strong before the war. And so I worked with the idea of return and creating a fictional movement, the Jewish Renaissance movement in Poland, which is... it is imaginary, fictional, yet it's very, very much connected to reality, because many, many Israelis are standing and queuing for getting a second passport from Poland because it's part of the European Union. Mm-hmm. So there was something going on making these films that really very much I wanted to kind of see what's the reality, you know, like how the relations between Israel and Poland. And so, shall I show a clip from the second part?
Wracajcie do Polski, do waszego, naszego kraju. Uleczcie nasze rany, a uleczycie swoje.
Do you want to ask me questions?
Sure. we can ask some questions about this project, and then we can go on to your most recent work. Thanks for that brief overview. And one of the questions that I had, which I noticed also going back to Trembling Time that is currently being exhibited at the Slot, is that I'm really struck by the way you compose your soundtracks. that there constantly seem to be these reverberations and echoes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Actually, it's I'm working with the same sound person for Trembling Time was composed by another friend. But since that work, actually, I've been working with only one guy, Daniel Meyer, who actually has an education in sonology, composition, and so we work together, and we try to kind of create, I don't know how to describe, but maybe kind of a soundscape that is kind of trying to create a 3D feeling to the image. Mm-hmm. And kind of, using a lot of some sort of tension that you are kind of being kind of all the time stay with the film, so you cannot escape actually. And for this specifically trilogy, we actually work with the national anthems, mm-hmm. The Polish national anthem and the Israeli national anthem. That was a kind of necessary.
Okay, now moving from sound to some of the visuals, sort of the style of these films really resonates. It seems that you're very consciously picking up on certain filmic styles when you're shooting the trilogy. Either early Zionist films, the first part particularly where he's in the stadium makes one think of Triumph of the Will. The building of the kibbutz reminds one of early sort of 1930s films. And in fact, I even think there was a photograph on one wall that may have been a historical photograph of putting up of a kibbutz in Israel. And I was wondering if you could talk about the history of older works.
I'm putting just in the meantime as we, you can have a look. This is actually a film produced by the British Mandate. So during the time that between 36 and 39, about 57 kibbutzim were built in the form of Wall and Tower. And there's one architect in Israel, Sharon Rothbard, he claims that actually the whole architecture of Israel is based on this Wall and Tower constructions. Mm-hmm. And today we actually still are, living in a kind of Wall and Tower conditions. What was interesting for me, that a lot of pioneers coming to Palestine to build, not even necessarily a state, they did not have the plan to build a state, they just wanted to settle in the land of Palestine, coming from Poland. It was interesting for me also for the trilogy, the kind of... The return in the form of an anachronistic form. That of course, if people today return are not building a Wall and Tower, but it's more kind of to symbolically a symbolic return. This is the kind of version that somebody was playing with the footage. That's not the original. somebody edited and speed up the space, but it's very, very slow. Everything is super slow and very realistic, documenting. The idea for me was to, in the Marcus Schmeyer, for example, one of the things, the architecture of the Olympic Stadium is, this is a place where Jews were not allowed to enter. Mm-hmm. Jews were only in a camp. And so thinking of a change, thinking of the future, thinking, okay, there is a, he's standing in this stadium, which was actually built to celebrate 10 years of the Communist Party, where many communist events, festivities were happening there. And thinking about the Nazis films that were, very much excluding you know, very much about their utopia of having very exclusive kind of society. And I wanted to think of these specific images, like in our collective memory, if they can actually represent a kind of different ideology, maybe multicultural, maybe opposing what is in our collective memory. And so, and then looking at a lot of, because, you know, such films that you saw now, the trilogy, these films are not, nobody is making such films, so it's more like, it was very conceptual, that it was also thinking about history and wanting to go through the pain, through this history, by recreating and them.
I mean, that's one of...
So here is actually an image that you just saw in Wallen Tower. This is very much, you know, pulling the rope and.
I mean, I think that's what makes it so evocative, is that by going back to these older films, as you said, you're bringing the past or a return or a recall of a memory of a trauma, but you're investing it into an almost impossible or utopian future. And I think that tension between, in a way, a nostalgia for a left movement and a projection into a what-if of the future is really powerful in your work. I was also wondering if you could say a little bit more about this utopian longing, almost. And at one point in the manifesto that accompanied the films in the Biennale...
Yeah, if you can read.
And so, for those of you who can't read it, I'll just read one phrase which struck me. It says, "This is the response we propose for these times of crisis, when faith has been exhausted and old utopias have failed. Optimism is dying out. The promised paradise has been privatized. The kibbutz apples and watermelons are no longer as ripe." So... It's a very evocative, rich phrase. And
I don't know. It's a very personal project, you know. That is kind of a clear disappointment, or kind of I had in my imagination for years growing up in Israel that this is the perfect society to live in, and then suddenly everything collapsed, you know, and so. And through the years, growing up and learning later, the kibbutz also, the kibbutz idea is really a clear fantasy of a perfect society that was actually brought from Europe, from East Europe, socialist idea, communist idea, to live a better life that actually was opposing the bourgeoisie kind of life back in East Europe, and they had really hope for better fitting society, and so, but this is collapsing because of the complete change to capitalist society that is that influenced by this country, but everything is being privatized, and it just everything is falling apart. And of course, because of the ongoing politics, and I wanted to trigger the imagination that maybe Poland can be a good escape. But of course, I'm not 100% sure this is a solution. But it was more thinking that we can. There's a new generation, you know, in both sides, and to start a dialogue and see what we want for ourselves. Slavomir Sharkovsky, often in our talks, he gives an example of like the Matrix, the two pills, the blue pills and the red pills. What happens if you take the blue pills? And what would happen if you take the red pill? And so I don't know which one of them, but if let's say the blue pill, if you take it, 3.3 million Jews instantly go back to Poland. if you take the red pill, actually you are able to change the Polish society to welcome. So which one would you take? So it's more about possibilities of changing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you sum it up well with that phrase, what you said, the political imagination. And similarly to how, as you said, this is a very personal film for you, and you commented on, at one point, a journalist who had sort of tears in her eyes when she was interviewing you. But this brings me to the idea of publics and the various publics and audiences who see this. And I was thinking today, this morning, about a phrase I was reading. It was actually a nice article by Louis Messiah on authenticating audiences, which, coming out of Tony K. Bambara, mentions this idea of a dynamic connection between an artist, an artwork, and an audience, and this idea of forging a community. And just thinking about what are the differences for you when your work is screened or you're addressing an audience, for example, in Poland versus in Berlin, where there is still a dearth of a Jewish population, versus in the United States or in Israel. And how does that, the shifting context, or the context of an international biennale where you have just thousands of anonymous people passing through, and what does that do to the work?
Well, it is a personal work, but it's trying to be quite universal. You know, it's kind of, I wanted to shift. It's the problem that I do not personally only experience. You know, it's like the issue of nation states and the, you know, the politics of exclusion and inclusion and the history. And so I think it touches, if you are not Jewish or you're not Israeli or you're not Polish, but you have also yourself kind of certain things, certain concerns about your society or other societies. And there is some sort of, openness to the world that you can actually enter. But of course, the more personal it is for you, more motivated to actually go deeper into the work, and maybe you're being more engaged. But it's also the question of where it's shown and how, because it was shown. My preference is to show it as a kind of non-linear. So while he's already dead, you can still hear him talking. So this kind of possibility of experiencing the work while showing it back to back. It's very different, but it's kind of also, it's more propaganda also style. It's like, you know, you're now locked in a room and you ought to sit through 1 hour and experience the work.
I mean, along those lines,
just one thing, yeah. We were quite active so about showing this work. We wanted to reach out not only to the art crowd, we wanted to reach out to the people who do not have access to museums, who do not live close by, let's say Warsaw. We actually traveled with the work and show it in many different communities that actually should be engaged, you know, with the subject. And so kind of art and activism work together.
I mean, this work reached a large public sort of universally, but I'm wondering, at one point, I think it was in 2013, you did a very small localized performance in Cologne, Germany, which kind of took Trembling Time but sort of pushed it into a very local circumstance. And it was a live performance. Mm-hmm. And it was called 2 Minutes of Standstill. So I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that.
Actually, I would say it's in one hand, it's a very unsuccessful project, which actually is interesting to experience a kind of unsuccessful, and unsuccessful in the sense that I was hoping more people will join, but But it, actually, the project is about migrating a form. Because if the terminating time is actually the in memory of the soldiers who died during all the wars in Israel, and it's actually a form that is used to commemorate the Holocaust. So I live today in Germany, and I wanted to not only I'm an immigrant in Germany, and I also come with a set of, you know, experiences and kind of my identity. And so far, I wanted to kind of say, okay, I live here, and we have shared history. We have, like, there are about 40,000 Israelis living today in Berlin. So they're not moving to Poland, moving to Germany. And we just have to face the fact that we have shared history, and I do not want to differentiate between the victim and the oppressor. I want to say, let's deal with that now, and how do we deal with racism and also that is still going on. But from the very moment I started the project, I was very much confronted with very negative reactions, because there is what I call it in a very maybe ironic way, but this copyright over the Holocaust. Holocaust copyright. So it's like, do not touch my Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And so I think for Germans who like to keep this kind of guilt feeling, they're very comfortable in this kind of zone, and not to... It was very, very difficult that I do such a project, and they kind of blame me, let's say, and my idea to that I'm using Germany to criticize Israel and the occupation, and so they messed up with my message, and the media was full of very negative reactions. However, a school that has 90% of Turkish immigrants were very, very, very much for the project and worked out around this idea, and the school kids were completely against at first because I'm Israeli, so they don't want to associate themselves with an Israeli, but they finally agreed, and so they took it as a, and actually they stand still, they come to the street and stand.
And that school had been bombed, right? Hmm? Or a bomb had gone off close
yeah,
to that
is,
school.
Yeah, this is not in the school, but in that street, the NSU put a bomb in the 90s. The National Socialist Underground. So it's not very, very big, but it's still, there is a neo-Nazis still in Germany. And so, yeah, but... I think the project is actually the few months that I was trying to engage. That was more, it's not just about it, this idea that for people who stand still for 2 minutes in the city of Cologne, but it's more. I had many conversations, for example, with the traffic company, like the trams and the buses, and they really wanted to join us, but then they decided to back off, and so they were a mess.
So what are you, your most recent film is Inferno. It's not. Sorry.
That's all right.
Do you want to share a few clips from Inferno, or do you have, again, you're dealing with forms of extremism, institutionalization.
Yeah, actually, there's a website for the movement. If you want to have a look at this, you can see documentations from the Congress. But Inferno is actually part of a project about new religious movements in Brazil. Wedding was supposed to be the part of the Second Temple. This man is planning to build a third temple in Jerusalem. And this is a model of a temple that is actually being built in Sao Paulo. Here in this, these are some pictures from their plan. And this is a sketch for the plan. Temple of Solomon in Sao Paulo. So this is the background a little bit, just to make it very short. And when I heard about the construction of this temple, I came with the idea that I would like to destroy it. So it fits the history of the temples. And I worked around this idea and made a 20-minute film called Inferno. And I show you as much as we want, so you can say stop.
That was quite something. So I guess I was just, my final question before we open it up to the audience is that with this film, as with the trilogy, you seem to work quite a bit of the interplay between historical fact and fiction, the kind of hybrid space of neither just pure fact or complete fiction. I was wondering if you could discuss that a bit.
Yeah, I think what really inspires me is reality and the possibility of changing that. So if you have the reality and changing, fiction comes with fiction, you know, the fictionalism. But it's somehow, at least in my way of looking at things, it stays in a kind of logic. and of course I want to provoke this discussion.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.